Hi everyone, Devin Leishman here. I'm Marketing and Community Manager at Origin Ventures, a Series A and seed-focused venture capital firm. Today, I'm continuing our startup series with Jim Drury, CEO of Boston-based esports company Gamer Sensei, a portfolio company in Origin's Fund 4. Jim and I talk about the growth of esports, its parallels to traditional sports, how esports and Gamer Sensei are moving into the mainstream, and more. Hope you enjoy the interview. Okay. Hi, Jim. Thanks for joining me. So if you just want to sort of tell everybody who you are, what Gamer Sensei does, that would be great.
Sure. My name is Jim Drury. I'm the CEO of Gamer Sensei, and we help gamers win more.
That's awesome. And how do you do that?
You know, we do it in a variety of ways. We're probably best known for our one-to-one coaching marketplace. We have a collection, a hand-curated, high-quality collection of the best esports coaches online. And we have a proprietary system that helps match people who want to get better with coaches who can help them get better. And so that's kind of the core of our business, what we're best known for. We also have some other products. One's called Sensei Bot, and that's a Discord chat bot that helps people make smart decisions about metagame for games like League of Legends and Hearthstone. And we have another one that's coming out soon called Range Royale, which is actually a mini game that allows you to train your reflexes and aiming skills for battle royale games and first person shooters.
Awesome. So it's sort of an all in one. You're a gamer, maybe you don't necessarily win all the time. You want to get better. Gamer Sensei is kind of a one stop shop, you know, everything from here are these automated systems, you know, all the way to we're going to actually match you with a coach who can help you get better at Fortnite or Overwatch or whatever. Correct?
That's exactly right. So, you know, awesome. We focus on what we call game mastery. Mm-hmm. You know, that ability to get better at what you do and, you know, do better at the games that you love.
Cool. Awesome. So let me sort of kind of pull back a little bit. So how did you personally, you know, how did you get into this industry? I mean, you know, we'll talk more about esports growth in a minute, but how did you personally find yourself, you know, as the CEO of this sort of, you know, esports gamer-based startup?
Sure. So my gaming history goes back to the dawn of time, effectively. You know, I've always loved competitive games from the stand-up arcade days. I think probably the game that really kind of sunk the hook in as far as competitive play goes is actually an Atari 2600 title called Warlords, where you just had four people with paddles battling each other until basically one man's left standing. And I think I went through a number of paddles, breaking each of them. And from that point forward, you know, that was my thing, playing competitive games. And, you know, if you're a student of the history of games, you know, you'll know that gaming started as a social experience in the arcades. And, you know, there's a massive explosion of that type of play. And there was a lot of couch play, you know, where you'd have a friend or two or a family member playing with you. But then we kind of went into a dark time for multiplayer games where, you know, people were playing on home consoles. They didn't have as much multiplayer access. Yeah. And then, you know, over the last 5 to 10 years, it's really all exploded again with the pervasiveness of broadband and the ease of downloading digital titles. So now we're back to this really super social gaming experience that we really haven't seen culturally, you know, since the early days of gaming.
Yeah, see, I think that's interesting because I am a bit younger than you, but so I sort of do have gaming in my mind as that sort of, you know, solitary, you know, it's a, no offense, it's sometimes it's a geek on the couch by himself, right? And it's interesting because you see things like Fortnite now, which obviously is, you know, it's so incredibly social. The whole idea is play against 99 other people. And, you know, it's interesting to hear the perspective of somebody who's really been doing this, you know, a little bit longer than I have to say, well, actually, this is kind of how it started. I mean, do you find that other folks are kind of surprised by how social it is these days?
Yeah, you know, I do find that they're surprised. And, you know, if you think about it, though, they really shouldn't be. You know, WoW's been out for more than 10 years. And that's a game that had, you know, tens of millions of monthly active users playing together, you know, cooperative, massively multiplayer online game. And so games like that have been kind of the mainstay of social gaming for core gamers for a long time. And I think recently with the rise of esports, what you're seeing is those dynamics coming together, the competitiveness of kind of classic gaming combined with the social power of games like MMOs comes together into something like Fortnite. And it's just, you know, ridiculously powerful.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, so that goes well into my next question, which is, what is it about this particular moment that, you know, has led to this galvanization of esports? Is it, as you mentioned, is it the availability of broadband? Is it, you know, increased interest? Is it decreased barriers to entry? They're not as expensive. What leads to this being the moment? And I guess, is this, do you think, the moment that really is going to be esports time to shine?
Yeah, I would have probably called that moment a few times in the past, so I wouldn't necessarily say that it's definitively right now. But I would say that all the elements that you mentioned are factors, right? So digital marketplaces like Steam, or the ability to download games on your mobile device or to your console, you know, you don't even have to go to a store now and do classic discovery to find things. Your friends tell you about a cool game. Hey, I'm playing Fortnite. They send you an invite link. You're playing it, you know, 15 minutes later.
Yeah.
And so now there's kind of a consumer impulse pattern that makes it very easy to jump into these things. And the pervasiveness of the distribution mechanisms, the rise of free-to-play business models, where basically you don't have to pay exactly unless you really love a game. So it makes it very easy for somebody who wants to find the right game to go out there and find it, you know, have a great time, and then hopefully get some coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you personally been gaming this whole time, you know, or have you also kind of found yourself caught up in this sort of, you know, increasing wave and how it's become more of a social movement these last few years?
You know, I never stopped gaming.
Good to hear.
Yeah, you know, it's actually hard working on. We support 15 titles on the platform right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the challenge is having enough time to be proficient in all of them.
Yeah.
So you know, I have to ration my time on that side. But
that's but like yeah, a you know, problem to have, right?
Yeah, it's a great problem to have. You know, I think that's another misperception of the industry. I spent about 20 years in the game publishing and development side of the business. Mm-hmm. And people would always say, "Oh, does that mean you play games all day?" And the answer was almost always no.
Yeah.
But now, as an esports coaching service, the answer sometimes is yes.
Ironically, yeah, no, it is. I remember, you know, trying to look up and learn more about this industry, you know, as we got to know Gamer Sensei a little bit better and started to get to know the business better as well. And, you know, yeah, some of that was saying, well, you know, is this actually, you know, is this something that gamers really will pay for, and really, you know, is the demand really out there? And, you know, obviously as investors in Gamer Sensei, we found unequivocally the answer is yes. But, you know, maybe if you can speak to that a little bit, if there is sort of a hump that you have to get over in terms of, you know, selling the product, do you go right to gamers? You know, do you find, is it a harder sell? Are people finding you? Maybe dive in a little bit more in terms of, you know, how you're actually reaching some of these gamers. That'd be great.
Sure. So, you know, I think a common misperception, or, you know, just folks who aren't familiar with the space, is to lump all these different games together and call them esports. Mm-hmm. And that would be, you know, and then say that it's one monolithic audience that you address the same way. Yeah. And it would be the same thing as saying, you know, I'm gonna market to a Bundesliga fan the same way I market to an NFL fan, because, hey, it's football.
Totally.
Right. And it's just not. And so, you know, our games are different. What people get from the coaching experience is different depending on the game. A really strategic kind of sequence-focused game like StarCraft II generally commands a higher price per hour, has an older demographic. They're more focused on specific skill improvement. Mm-hmm. And then you go to a game like Fortnite, and you've got a very different kind of customer. In a lot of cases now, it's parents and kids playing together.
Huh.
And because the kids have the time to get good, you know, when the parents jump in, they're just holding the team back. And so we often now are coaching parents, so that way when they have time to play together with their family, they're actually contributing to the wins.
Yeah.
And so, you know, yeah, so we our students range the spectrum. And so the ways that we reach out to them kind of have to be germane to that audience. Mm-hmm. And so our coaches are a great source of new students. We have a built-in referral system that the coaches can make use of. And our coaches also set their own prices and control a lot of their own merchandising and marketing with tools that we built into the platform. Mm-hmm. And so that allows them in the communities where they're active, if it's Reddit or Twitter or, you know, some specific game forum, to interact directly with potential students and get those folks over to get some lessons.
Absolutely. So let's dig in a bit deeper there. So, you know, as a venture capital firm, we kind of look to invest in these marketplace businesses, right? Especially business to consumer ones, where there's, you know, some entity in the middle that's connecting, you know, coaches to gamers, or, you know, to go back as far as our investment in Grubhub, it's connecting restaurants to consumers, right?
Right.
So as a marketplace business that's connecting, you know, coaches to gamers, you know, what are some unique advantages or challenges of, you know, kind of being that marketplace? And, you know, if you can maybe talk, you know, is the supplier side finding coaches, or is the buyer side kind of more challenging to answer? Sorry, I know I just threw a lot at you there.
No, that's fine. It's actually a fairly common question that we get asked. Mm-hmm. You know, in the early going, I think we all felt like it was going to be the supply side. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have a very talented team, and we were able to put together a framework that allows us to screen coaches and, you know, bring the kind of best quality coaches on the platform. And mm-hmm. you would think that might be easy because you just figure, hey, look at whoever's at the top of the leaderboard, and there's your coach. But in actual fact, you know, what it takes to be a great coach and what it takes to be a good esports player aren't necessarily the same thing.
Right.
And so a lot of our coaches are former pros. Some of our coaches are just really elite players. And then there's kind of a third group of people who are just fantastic instructors who also have deep game knowledge and competence. Mm-hmm. And so our focus is on the customer experience to make sure that our students are always satisfied. So we take a lot of qualitative measurements, things like NPS scores. We have student ratings of the sensei. And then on the back end, we have a whole scoring system that the mm-hmm. sensei see that allow them to kind of understand their own performance relative to the other coaches.
Yeah.
And so all that comes together to actually solve a lot of the issues around mm-hmm. supply side in a traditional two-sided marketplace.
Totally.
And then on the demand side, you know, I think it's still early days. We've got a mm-hmm. good flow of customers, sure. but there's still, you know, it reminds me of kind of the early days of daily fantasy sports. Mm-hmm. People knew what fantasy sports were. They kind of knew what sports right. betting was, but they didn't really know how it fit together.
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
Yeah, and so I think where we are, people are increasingly aware of esports. They certainly mm-hmm. have heard the word coaching, but right. most, if you walk into the average room of 50 people and you ask how many of them have ever been coached for a video game, not a lot of hands go up.
Sure.
And so yeah. our job is to socialize this, to get as many people coached as possible, because it is a great experience, and the best part is that it works. People who get coached by us have massive improvements in skill and performance, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter where they start from. If they're a new student, you know, they just started playing the game, obviously there's a lot you can learn. But we actually see when we analyze results from our students that high-level players actually sometimes benefit the most. So it's possible yeah. to get stuck in a rut. So if you ever played, you know, traditional sports like golf or tennis,
yep.
and you think you're doing pretty well, you're beating all your friends, and then you go to a coach to get your swing tuned up, and you find out you've mm-hmm. just been doing it wrong the whole time.
Exactly.
And so, you know, what happens is a lot of people spend time on Twitch or YouTube. They watch a lot of other people playing. But in a lot of cases, you end up focusing on the wrong thing to improve your game, and you reinforce bad habits. You know, the other example we like to give is, you know, a friend of mine moved over here from Scotland and had never watched American football. Yeah. And we started watching football together. And, you know, he didn't really understand the deep mechanics, but he saw the flashy plays. And so you watch a hard-fought game that's, you know, tied to the end, and then there is this Hail Mary pass that wins it.
Yep.
And then you start practicing Hail Marys because, hey, that's how you win football games. When, in right, fact, the right, whole right. game was won and lost in the trenches between the offensive line exactly. and the defensive line. Yeah. And totally. So that's the same thing happens in esports. If you watch your favorite players on Twitch and you listen to the mm-hmm. announcers, they're generally calling out those splash plays because that's the excitement of the moment. That's the entertainment right. value. But the of core course. Mechanics are what win and lose games, and our coaches help expose that.
Yeah. No, again, I think that's a good analogy, kind of drawing it back to traditional sports. I think you often hear the adage, you know, talent is 80% and coaching is 20%. And it's interesting to hear that, you know, it's the high level players who can actually gain a lot from it. Because as you said, you know, maybe they're doing a lot right, but their fundamentals are wrong. So I just think that that's a good comparison. And, you know, hopefully we see it borne out more and more by more folks going over to you guys. So let's shift gears a little bit and say, so sort of across the industry, you know, it's I get the sense that this is a growing industry. You know, we've seen more and more press, which I'll talk about in a second. But, you know, for those that don't know, how big is the esports industry?
It depends on how you want to measure it. So there's a lot of third-party research out there that sizes it about $1 billion. But most of that research is actually referring to media value, i.e. the size of the advertising or sponsorship-driven market.
Okay.
In reality, esports is actually quite a bit bigger. So a game like League of Legends, which, you know, I would lump a significant portion of their revenues in as esports related revenues, that title alone generates, I think, $1.6 billion a year. So across all the publishers who make money from esports titles, you're talking about a market that already is generating billions of dollars of consumer spend.
Yeah.
And there's now this ancillary media market that looks like it's going to be another $1 billion in size. So it's
right, yeah.
It's kind of a sleeping giant. Most people really don't interact with it. And because the games themselves often don't overlap, you know, you can be a League fan and not pay any attention to Dota. You can be a Dota fan and not care at all about Fortnite. You know, mm-hmm. Even within esports, those pieces feel separate sometimes. But if you look at the whole, it's probably a $10 billion industry.
Wow. Yeah. And, so I guess broadly, how is Gamer Sensei set to kind of take advantage of this large and, you know, growing industry? What are you guys going to do?
We're going to coach people mm-hmm. and we're going to help people win more. You know, I think the more people who play these games, the more you realize that a lot of the joy and satisfaction in them is in winning. That's not everything, and particularly in a game like Fortnite. There's a lot of moment to moment reward in just playing the game. Sure. But, you know, I think ultimately the reason why people play competitive games instead of single player games is to get those moments of achievement, to get that epic win. You know, we have a saying in the office, there's winning and there's winning.
Right.
We want to deliver that second kind of win. We want our students to have those moments where they carry their whole team, where they beat an opponent who's two ranks above them that they should have no chance against. And, you know, the way you do that is preparation, practice, and coaching. And so, you know, our tools and our human coaches allow us to, you know, help students have those moments of enjoyment. And you think about, you know, how much people spend on these games and how much of their time and effort they put into them. You know, it's a waste if they can't get something great out of it. And so we think as this market grows, it just positions us for more growth right alongside it.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who's terrible at Fortnite, I can definitely see how winning more would make the whole experience more fun. So I definitely buy the message there.
We can help you.
Good. You mentioned at the top a little bit about, you know, some of these new products beyond, you know, just matching with coaches, you know, some of these bots. Talk a little bit about, you know, how you're positioning for the future, you know, some of these additional kind of non, human coach related products.
Sure. You know, in some of them, we're just trying to help out the community. You know, I think our esports chatbot, Sensei Bot, it's not monetized. It's a thing that we provide to get people kind of thinking about mastery improvement. You know, if you want to know what the right counter pick is for an opponent's champion in League, you shouldn't have to open another app. You shouldn't have to go look up a website. You've already got Discord overlay on your machine. It's easy enough just to talk to the bot. And then you start to understand that there's limitations to that type of mastery improvement. And so the hope is that over time between that, and we also do a lot of kind of content pieces on our blog to help people understand finer points in different games and strategies. Yeah. We think across all of these, we help folks improve their mastery of these games. And then our hope is that some of those folks then want to move up and get some coaching.
Certainly. Cool. Yeah, that makes sense. Speaking of some of the content that you guys are writing on your blog, you know, I've also noticed, you know, in addition to what you guys are producing, I've seen a fair amount of press around Gamer Sensei just over the last couple months or so. So, you know, if you could peel back the curtain a little bit, you know, obviously don't give away too many of your secrets, but, you know, talk a bit about, you know, what the idea is in terms of getting press. Is this driving, you know, new gamers who are going to say, hey, you know, I want to check this out? Is it more just awareness for this growing market? You know, is it, in marketing speak, we would call that, you know, direct response versus awareness? Right. Is it both? Talk a little bit about the press. If you don't
yeah, know. You know, I think it fits somewhere in the middle. There's a concept called branded direct, you know, where you always want to have a direct response avenue for people who interact with your message, but you're also mostly out there telling the story.
Yep.
And so for us, you know, the Fortnite story is an interesting one, and it largely came about because we realized that there was a new audience. And this new audience was this broader demographic of parents and kids who want to play together, or parents who want their kids to get better at this game. And I know the journal story was a great piece. I think it focused maybe a little too much on the concept of parents wanting to avoid failure for their kids. That's not really a thing that we see as much. It's much more generally positive than that. It's that they want to play together and they want to win together. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was an audience that we really wanted to get the message out about, because that's how you know, we're not going to reach parents through, in most parents, through gaming subreddit posts.
Right. Sure.
And so that's, you know, that's where more general tactics like PR really kind of fit in well. you know, and we will continue to do that. As I said before, part of our job is to really kind of socialize the benefits of esports coaching mm-hmm. and how enjoyable it is and how well it works.
Yeah.
And so
it's, yeah. I was going to say, so it seems to me like, you know, most kids, again, not that I have a great sort of pulse on what the youth are up to nowadays, but it seems like a lot of kids are playing Fortnite and, you know, it sounds like, you know, obviously they're not necessarily in a position to spend a lot of money on things like coaching, but their parents are. So it sounds like gotten towards,
yep.
you know, more paying customers and trying to find this point of connection between a child who already plays and a parent who wants to connect with their child and potentially hop on the platform.
Correct.
Well.
Yeah. I maybe characterize it as a more mainstream audience, cool. you know, and, yep. and so therefore, you know, it behooves us to add some mainstream marketing programs to our mix. You know, I think if I want to get mm-hmm. a StarCraft 2 player or a Dota 2 player, I generally know where those guys are. And so, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty straightforward for us to reach into those communities and activate. And, you know, generally we have an offer that they're interested in. As you start talking about, you know, in some cases I've got grandparents, you know, making purchases on behalf of their grandkids. And so that's an audience that you're not going to reach that way. And so, you know, I think it's important for us to make sure that we stay on top of it.
Totally. So again, zooming out one more time here. So where do you guys think, you know, you're going to be in 5 years other than kind of helping people win? You know, is it more just sort of scaling and more coaches and better coaches? Is it kind of capturing, you know, the upward industry trend? You know, look ahead, I don't know, 2022 or whatever. What do you think Gamer Sensei focused on?
Then? Sure. Well, you know, I don't think our focus on esports mastery and performance improvement changes. That's at the core of what we are and what we do. You know, the mix of what we offer to get there will, of course, change. We're a very data-driven experimental organization. And so we'll continue to take shots on goal to find the right mix of products to satisfy our audience. But at our core, you know, the human-powered coaching, the marketplace is our foundation product, and that's the one we expect to see the most growth over time.
Cool. Couple more sort of just random questions here. So, you know, I've seen a fair amount of press about this partnership that you guys have with Becker University. So if you want to explain a little bit sort of what the idea is in working, you know, with a school like that for a scholarship program around gaming, I mean, do you think that's that's an idea that's, you know, one that you're going to continue pursuing?
So the Becker folks are fantastic. We're actually working with them right now to structure this upcoming semester's activities. And, you know, they have very successfully carved a name out for themselves as one of the leaders in collegiate esports. Through them, we actually met the folks over at the National Association of Collegiate Esports. And they're basically like the NCAA for esports. And they have over 80 member schools now. And we're working with them to expand esports coaching into these schools. And a lot of those schools either have varsity programs or club level programs. And quite a number of them are starting to offer scholarships as well. And so awesome. What you're seeing is that, you know, just like any other high skill recreational activity, it's a way for schools to attract talent. Mm-hmm. And it's a way for schools that might not want to spend $10 million on, you know, a new stadium display. Right. Let alone the stadium, to compete at a high level. You know, you can take a fairly small school that's focused a relatively small amount of dollars on their esports program, and they can compete at an international level if they choose to. And so I think that's attractive to a lot of kind of mid-sized schools who otherwise, you know, would be relegated to lower levels of competition in regular sports.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense to me. I mean, it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's sort of fewer barriers to entry than it would be with a traditional sport, which does make it, as you said, more accessible and available to, you know, maybe a smaller program who's kind of looking for an edge and a way to make a name for themselves.
Correct.
Awesome. Cool. So one final question. So, you know, we are a Chicago and Salt Lake City based firm, but we do make investments across the country. You guys are one of a few investments that we have in Boston, but you know it's obviously this kind of strong tech ecosystem. Talk a little bit about, you know, sort of the advantages, the disadvantages, just of being in that city and that ecosystem. Have you noticed, you know, that there's maybe a stronger pool of talent? talk a little bit about kind of the city in which you're building your company.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, Boston's a fantastic city for games. It's a fantastic city for tech talent. You know, I lived and worked in San Francisco for a while, and I certainly enjoyed that experience. But I think in Boston, we get a lot of the benefits as far as access to capital, access to talent, you know, a fairly cost-effective office infrastructure as well. You know, I think the geographic constraints of the Boston area are not as tight as someplace like, say, SF or NYC, where everything's kind of crammed in. And so that leads to, I think, the ability to run, you know, an early stage startup pretty effectively. And I think this year Boston's going to be number one or number two, I think, for startup economy. So, you know, it's not just us. It's a fantastic place to have a young company.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. As somebody who was born and raised just outside of the city, I that warms my heart to hear. So that's preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, it's also nice, you know, from just a pure homer perspective. You know, we lose a lot of our top talent historically out to the West Coast, and I think with over the last 3 to 5 years, with the surge in the startup community here, you're seeing a lot of the kind of top graduates out of these collegiate programs in the Boston area land at local startups, which is, I think, just fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's great for the ecosystem and great for the city. And you know, it's drawing some capital from, at least from us. You know, we're not necessarily an East Coast based firm, but we see, you know, things happening in the ecosystem. Saw you guys, and it just all clicked. So you know, we are certainly glad that we started looking into esports as a category, and definitely glad we found you guys.
And we're happy you found us too.
Great, awesome.